6 to 10 are based on the following news.
Brussels. NATO will reduce its peacekeeping forces in Bosnia and Kosovo by the end of the year because of improved political stability in the Balkans, the alliance announced yesterday. It said stabilization force, S4, troops in Bosnia will be cut from 19,000 to 12,000 and S4 troops in Kosovo from 38,000 to 33,200. NATO will then adopt a more regional approach to running its operations. These changes will help us build on our success, said NATO Secretary General George Robertson in a statement accompanying the announcement. Since we first sent forces to the Balkans, much has changed and improved, and we are changing with them. Washington. Following in the footsteps of recent U.S. First Ladies, Laura Bush sets out next week on an official solo trip abroad, confident she will have an instant rapport with world leaders and their spouses. The 8-day visit to France, Hungary, and the Czech Republic comes 16 months after her husband, George W. Bush, was inaugurated president, and almost a quarter of a century after the quiet primary school teacher from Midland, Texas, married into one of America's most famous political families. Her husband joked during the presidential campaign that, in order to convince Laura Welch to accept his proposal, he had to promise she would never have to give a speech, a vow that will be broken in Paris, Prague, and Budapest when she talks about education, women's health issues, and Afghan aid. Prague. 14 U.S. soldiers were injured, 3 seriously, when a military train transporting equipment collided with a local freight train in Western Czech Republic, police said yesterday. A Czech railway spokesman said the accident occurred just before 300 GMT and that the driver of the Czech freight train was killed in the crash near the spa town of Karlovy Vary, some 100 kilometers west of Prague. 10 American soldiers were injured, and from those, 3 were hurt seriously, he said. He gave no further details. He gave no cause for the accident and said an investigation was underway. Sydney. Record personal debt, tens of thousands of bankruptcies each year, and an interest rate rise cycle have economists and consumer advocates warning Australians face financial hardships which could threaten economic growth. This is their baptism of fire, said Lisa Montgomery from Consumer Service InfoChoice, referring to thousands who have taken on large mortgages lured by record low interest rates, a booming housing market, and a government first home buyer's grant. Australians were in debt to banks and other lending institutions to the tune of 665, double the debt level of March 1995, according to the latest Reserve Bank of Australia statistics. Seoul. More than 250 people from the Republic of Korea embarked on a trip to the north yesterday after its capital, Pyongyang, invited them to show its appreciation for donations of tangerines and carrots, the South's Unification Ministry said yesterday. The 6-day visit by 253 citizens from the subtropical resort island of Jeju came as a surprise because the North canceled government-level economic cooperation talks with the South, originally planned for this week in Seoul. The visitors, most of them farmers, left Jeju Airport yesterday morning and arrived at Sunan Airport, the gateway to Pyongyang, later in the day.
Question number 6. What did NATO announce yesterday?
Question number 7. Which of the following is not one of the destinations of Mrs. Bush's 8-day visit?
Question number 8. How many U.S. soldiers were injured in a train crash in Western Czech Republic, according to the police?
Question number 9. Which of the following statements is true about the current economic situation in Australia?
Question number 10. Why did the South Koreans' visit to Pyongyang come as a surprise?
Questions 11 to 15 are based on the following interview. Dr. Emily Gardner is an economist from Lancashire University. She specializes in the study of cereal production in tropical areas and spends a great deal of time abroad. Recently, she went on a 2-week trip to study the grain trade in a third world country, where she experienced a flood disaster at first hand. Dr. Gardner, tell us what happened.
Well, when I was met at the airport, I was given a very tight timetable, which involved travel to the provinces, all over the country in fact, although we started off in the capital. After about 3 or 4 days, my very good local guide and interpreter came with rather downcast faces and said that they didn't think we'd be able to go on our first trip to the east because the main city was waist-deep in water and the ferries that crossed the big river were unable to cross. So we decided to go the south instead. Now I'm rather glad that I never got there because the day after that, the main rail link was cut off and the lines were dangling limply into a really swollen river which kept on rising.
How did this affect you? I mean, were you marooned?
I was very lucky to be staying with a British family in the capital, but the house where I was living was quite seriously affected. The first day the water rose about 0.5 meter, and the children paddled in it. Worms fled from it, but were finally drowned, and then eaten by big black ants which invaded the house.
Were you able to get around? Did you have to take a boat?
No, I waded. Well, walked around, actually, without any shoes. At first I was told that I was a fool because of snakes, and, of course, a lot of the deaths there have been because of snake bites. But we were quite a long way from the rice fields where the snakes abound, so I bargained on the fact that there wouldn't be too many.
You were, as you say, staying in a rich area of the capital. Did you see what was happening in the poorer areas?
I did indeed, and I felt very involved with it, because we could see what was happening on the lower ground. The houses are really like tents made of rush matting supported by bamboo poles, and as the flood water gets deeper, people are forced to move to higher and higher land, taking their houses with them.
And what about food supplies?
Well, I was of course studying the merchants, and it was quite impressive how they had managed to move all their stock well above flood level, and were able to double prices in some areas of the capital that were cut off. The price of grain varied by about 100%, depending on where you were in the city. Now, what the government tries to do in these circumstances is two things. One is to try to sell some of its stock on the open market at low prices in an effort to bring down prices, but this turned out to be in vain. And the other thing is to organize relief in soup kitchens in conjunction with the international charities.
How did you manage to get out? Because the airport was underwater for a lot of the time, and there just weren't any flights.
I, of course, double reconfirmed my ticket out, but on the day itself I was told that the flight didn't exist and really only got out because there was a spare seat on another flight. As we taxied for takeoff, the wings of the F-28, which is by no means a large plane, were actually over the floodwaters on the runway, which didn't inspire a great deal of confidence, so it was one of the most spirited takeoffs I've ever had.
But you lived to tell the tale.
Yes.
Question number 11. Dr. Emily Gardner is an economist and university lecturer. What is her area of research?
Question number 12. Why did she go on a 2-week visit to a third world country recently?
Question number 13. How did she move around in the floods?
Question number 14. According to the woman, which of the following was a major threat to human life in the rice fields?
Question number 15. Which of the following statements is not true according to the interview?
Questions 16 to 20 are based on the following talk.
Good evening. You're now listening to our program, Business Matters. As all of you know, every year we hold a competition for our future successful enterprises and talented businessmen. It is at this point in the program that we come to the details of our annual competition. We want to hear from you if you're aged between 18 and 25 years of age, and you've started up your own business in the last year. Here on Business Matters, we're looking for a young man or a woman to win the awards for our annual competition entitled Young Entrepreneur. Last year, you may remember, it was awarded to Yunus Ozal, a young boy from Turkey who set up his own highly successful graphic design agency and now employs a staff of 15 from his office based in Ankara. But we had entries from all over the world and all kinds of business enterprises, keeping bees to microlighting jewelry making to fast food. We shortlisted 6 people out of more than 300 entries and then sent our reporters to interview each finalist to tell us in more detail how they had gone about raising capital, finding premises, advertising their business, and impacting on the market. Here's what you have to do. Send in your entry, it must be typed, on one side of the paper only, and tell us how you got your business enterprise off the ground. Maybe you employ other people. Maybe you run it single-handed. Maybe you're small but growing. Maybe you're already into the export market. Make it interesting reading. Remember, we have to read through hundreds of entries, and you'll want yours to be a memorable one in the minds of the judges. Keep your entry within 350 words, and when it's complete, get an independent witness to verify your entry by signing their name and occupation at the end. This must be someone who is not related to you and who is not a business colleague, but who has known you for at least 3 years. Don't forget to add your full name and address, the name and address of your business, and give us your daytime phone number so that we can contact you if we need to. The closing date for entries is 3 months from now. That's June 15. If you want your entry returned eventually, then send us an envelope addressed to yourself and enclosed an international reply coupon. We'll be broadcasting the 6 shortlisted entries the second week in July, so stay tuned to Business Matters. The name of the prize winner will be announced 2 months after that, in September. Send your entries to Business Matters, P.O. Box 171.
Question number 16. What is the name of the annual competition?
Question number 17. According to the speaker, who are eligible for the annual competition?
Question number 18. Each entry has to meet several requirements. Which of the following is not one of these requirements?
Question number 19. How many shortlisted finalists are there in the annual competition?
Question number 20. When is the closing date for entries?
Section 4. Listening Test. Part A. Note-taking and gap-filling. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear a short talk. You will hear the talk only once. While listening to the talk, you may take notes on the important points so that you can have enough information to complete a gap-filling task on a separate answer booklet. You are required to write one word or figure only in each blank. You will not get your answer booklet until after you have listened to the talk. Now listen to the talk carefully.
I liked him the minute I saw him. Before she even said a word, I knew there was something funny about her. Such statements are examples of snap judgments, opinions which are formed suddenly, seemingly on no sound reason at all. Most people say snap judgments are unsound or even dangerous. They also admit they often make snap judgments and find them to be fairly sound. Snap judgments like love at first sight or instant hate, if taken seriously, have usually been considered signs of immaturity or lack of common sense. When someone has a feeling about someone else, people more often laugh than pay attention. Most people think you find out about a person by listening to what he says over a period of time. Others say actions speak louder than words, usually in relation to keeping promises, paying bills, or sending money home. Because people assume you are what you say you are, they talk a lot to become acquainted with each other. Once two people have become acquainted, it was their conversation that gave them their information about each other. As behavioral sciences develop, however, researchers find the importance of speech has been overestimated. Although speech is the most obvious form of communication, we do use other forms of which we may be only partially aware, or in some cases, completely unaware. It is possible we are unconsciously sending messages with every action. Messages which are unconsciously picked up by others and used in forming opinions. These unconscious actions and reactions to them may in part account for our feelings and snap judgments. We communicate a great deal, researchers have found, with our bodies, by the way we move, sit, stand, and what we do with our hands and heads. Imagine a few people sitting in a waiting room. One is tapping his fingers on his briefcase. Another takes rubbing his hands together. Another is biting his fingernails. Still another grabs the arms of his chair tightly, and one keeps running his fingers through his hair. These people aren't talking, but they're saying a lot, if you know the body language they're using. Two of the most telling forms of behavior are driving a car and playing games. Notice a person's reaction to stress in these situations, and to aggressive behavior in others. Those who easily become angry, excited, passive, or resentful when driving or playing may be giving insights into the inside self. While clothing serves a purely practical function, how you dress also communicates many things about your social status, state of mind, and even your aspirations and dreams. The 11-year-old girl who dresses like a college student and the 40-year-old woman who dresses like a teenager are saying something through what they wear. What you communicate through your kind of dress definitely influences others to accept the picture of yourself you are projecting. In the business world, the person who dresses like a successful manager is most likely to be promoted into a managing position. Also important are the ornaments a person wears, buttons, medals, jewels, etc. Such ornaments are often the means by which a person announces a variety of things about himself, his convictions, his beliefs, his membership in certain groups, his past achievements, and his economic status. Another sign of a person's nature is said to be found in his choices in architecture and furniture. A person who would really like to live in a castle would probably be more at home in the Middle Ages. Those who like Victorian family houses and furniture might secretly welcome a return to more rigid social norms. People who are content with modern design are probably comfortable with modern lifestyles. When you see a person for the first time, even though he doesn't speak to you, you begin watching him, his actions, his attitude, his clothing, and many other things. There's a wealth of information there if you know how to read it. Perhaps snap judgments aren't so unsound after all.
Part B, Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear 5 English sentences. You will hear the sentences only once. After you have heard each sentence, translate it into Chinese and write your version in the corresponding space in your answer booklet. Now let's begin Part B with sentence translation.
Sentence number 1. I don't really know what qualifications are needed for the job, but I think obviously a degree in modern languages or political science or economics would be useful.
Sentence number 2. The latest inflation and unemployment figures were issued today. The current inflation rate is 7.5%. That's 1% up on last year.
Sentence number 3. In summary, we can see that every business, no matter how large or small, and no matter what products it turns out, depends on advertising to attract and keep customers.
Sentence number 4. Briefly, I'm proposing that the government should take action to eliminate smoking, a complete ban on all cigarette sponsorship and advertising, even at the point of sale.
Sentence number 5. It was the worst earthquake that the country has suffered for over 3 decades. Thousands of residents have a second night camped out in parks and gardens.
2. Passage Translation. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear 2 English passages. You will hear the passages only once. After you have heard each passage, translate it into Chinese and write your version in the corresponding space in your answer booklet. You may take notes while you are listening. Now let's begin passage translation with the first passage.
Passage 1. Recent government figures indicate that our standard of living is rising, but they don't take into account important factors like pollution, crime, and stress of the modern society. What people want above all is security, and an environment where their children can grow up to be healthy adults. In the past, wages were much lower, but then people could go out without constantly having to look over their shoulder, and moms could send their kids to play in the streets without worrying they'd be attacked or offered drugs by someone.
Passage 2. The definition of an entrepreneur is a person who organizes and manages a new business. Most of today's successful entrepreneurs are young. Some of them come from rich families, but others are poor. Some have a lot of education, but some never finish college. As you can see, entrepreneurs can come from many different backgrounds. However, all entrepreneurs have one important characteristic in common. They are not afraid to take risks. We could say they are all gamblers. American history is full of famous entrepreneurs. These people have become a new kind of cultural hero, like basketball players or movie stars.
上海市高级口译资格证书第二阶段考试 A 卷
Interpretation Section Part A Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear two passages in English. After you have heard each paragraph, interpret it into Chinese. Start interpreting at the signal and stop it at the signal. You may take notes while you are listening. Remember, you will hear the passages only once. Now let's begin Part A with the first passage.
Passage 1. London, the capital of the United Kingdom, has a population of about 7 million and an area of 1,580 square kilometers. Although it no longer ranks among the world's most populous cities, London is still one of the world's great centers for classical and popular culture. For example, it has enjoyed a reputation for superb theater since the time of Shakespeare in the 16th century. London boasts many world-famous tourist attractions. The most impressive sightseeing places include the Big Ben, the Oxford Street, and of course, the Buckingham Palace, where thousands of tourists come to watch the pageantry, the changing of guards. London itself is a living museum with more than 2,000 years of history and culture. The jewel in this cultural crown is the British Museum, with more than 4 million exhibits.
Passage 2. I am an optimist. As will be clear from what I have written, I think knowledge is a blessing, not a curse. This is especially true in the case of genetic knowledge. For example, with genetic knowledge, we'll be able to understand the molecular nature of cancer for the first time, to diagnose and prevent Alzheimer's diseases, and to discover the secrets of human history. All these seem to me to be immense blessings. It is true that genetics also brings the threat of new dangers, such as unequal insurance premiums for people of different genetic factors, new forms of biological warfare, and unexpected side effects of genetic engineering. But most of these dangers are either easily dealt with or extremely far-fetched. So I cannot agree to the fashionable pessimism about science, nor can I accept the idea of a world that turns its back on science. Part B. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear two passages in Chinese. After you have heard each paragraph, interpret it into English. Start interpreting at the signal and stop it at the signal. You may take notes while you are listening. Remember, you will hear the passage only once. Now let's begin Part B with the first passage. Passage 1.
有关研究表明，在过去40多年里，传统产业的成长与壮大在很大程度上得益于高新技术的带动。美国经济之所以能够在较长一段时期内保持持续增长，其中一个很重要的原因就在于高新技术，如信息技术等，对传统产业的渗透和带动。据统计，信息技术产业对美国经济的贡献率超过 30%， 已成为推动美国经济增长的强大动力。因此， 我们可以得出这样的结论，通过利用高新技术来改造传统产业，促进产业结构的改革与调整，肯定有利于增强上海产业和产品的竞争优势。
Passage 2。
尊敬的新西兰贵宾、女士们、先生们，我能在此为新西兰贵宾主持隆重的欢迎仪式深感荣幸和愉快。中国和新西兰虽然相距遥远，但两国人民长期以来一直友好交往。这些年里，我们在政治、经济、文化、教育领域进行了真诚的、卓有成效的合作。随着两国人民之间交往的日趋频繁，我作为一名中国学者，有机会多次访问新西兰，在那儿学习、讲学和交流。新西兰美丽的自然风景、充足的阳光和宜人的气候、安静舒适的学习环境以及和蔼友善的人民，给我留下了深刻的印象。
上海市高级口译资格证书第二阶段考试 B 卷
Interpretation Section Part A Directions。In this part of the test, you will hear two passages in English. After you have heard each paragraph, interpret it into Chinese. Start interpreting at the signal and stop it at the signal. You may take notes while you are listening. Remember, you will hear the passages only once. Now let's begin Part A with the first passage.
Passage 1.Canadians have a strong and increasing involvement in a wide range of cultural activities throughout the country. The performing arts are well established, with professional and amateur companies active in music, drama, and dance. Canadian writing and painting have achieved growing international recognition in recent years. The educational system in Canada strongly encourages music, drama, and the visual arts at all levels.Canada has a comprehensive social security system for the aged, disabled, sick, and unemployed. The federal and provincial health care services, mostly supported by the government, are available to all Canadians. Public hospital treatment, prenatal and maternity service, and many medicines are government subsidized, as is dental treatment for children.
Passage 2.Distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Government of New Zealand, I take the pleasure in welcoming you to the Cultural, Administrative, Economic and Financial Centre of New Zealand. I would like to extend my warmest greeting to all of you, delegates and representatives of international organisations involved in environmental protection, upon the opening of the second informal meeting of the Environment Ministers.Environmental protection is very crucial. It is the priority of the government's agenda. In this sense, the government of New Zealand has increased budget allocations for environmental management and provided opportunity to the Ministry of Environment to mobilize international support for the sector. Only during the last 4 years, government's budget for environmental protection has more than tripled.
Part B. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear two passages in Chinese. After you have heard each paragraph, interpret it into English. Start interpreting at the signal and stop it at the signal. You may take notes while you are listening. Remember, you will hear the passages only once. Now let's begin Part B with the first passage. Passage 1.
环境保护实际上要求每个个人、每个企业做出努力。只有通过这种方式，我们的地球才能真正得到保护。所以我们认为，应该提高公众保护环境的意识。如果每个人都能够在这方面坚持不懈、尽心尽职，环境保护就不会存在问题。同时，我感觉到保护环境将需要大量的资金，以及敢于承担风险的勇气。例如， 我的公司已经在环保领域投资了1000多万元，但我们还没有从中获得任何回报，所以我们不得不向我们的股东解释这样做的理由究竟是为了什么。
Passage 2。
美国是世界上最发达的国家之一，人均国内生产总值近3万美元。中国是一个发展中国家，人均国内生产总值不足700美元。所以两国的社会制度、意识形态和文化背景都不相同，两国在实现人权和基本自由的途径和方式上也不同。中美双方对一些问题的看法不一致和存在分歧，这并不奇怪。中国强调首先要重视生存权和发展权，同时努力加强民主与法治建设，保护人民的经济、社会、文化、公民和政治权利。改革开放以来，中国在这些方面取得了很大的进步。